Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Call, and this, of course, is the show where we talk about that, what it means, what Revelation 18:4 is suggesting. Well, I would say in this environment, it's more than a suggestion. When it says, come out of her, do not participate in her sins, which I can't help but contend, again, are beyond obvious at this point, so that you don't partake of the plagues. And the plagues, too, are getting to be real obvious and almost, and real soon now they will be, completely unavoidable. So let me start out today this way by saying I've been concerned, and that's probably the right word, for some time about the level of deception in not just America with a K, but indeed the whole world. And certainly over the last years, but especially even the last few months, I've done more than one show on that or about that. And certain verses come to mind. One of the themes that clearly applies to the end times in Matthew 24, Yeshua is asked what will be the signs of where we're at, when we're there, and so forth. And he says right up front, see that you're not deceived. And hey, that certainly rings true now, doesn't it? I again also mentioned this quote. I've mentioned it of late as well, where William Casey, former CIA director, said, basically, we'll know that our level of propaganda, our deception is complete when everything that the American public believes is, well, he said false. I would say a lie. And that's the key, a lie versus the truth. So I'll start out this way, but you'll see where I'm headed pretty quickly here. We've been told, we know that Scripture is truth, His Word is truth, and yet, really, what does that mean? Honestly, it's way too esoteric, if you think about it, for a society that believes that, well, men can have babies, and that transgender men with a penis can compete in women's sports and break all their records, and basically, people who can't tell an innie from an outie. The term that I use for those is deceived unto death. Remember what Hosea said in chapter 4, verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And basically what he says is you've rejected knowledge. They've rejected knowledge, they've rejected truth, literally to the point where most of America and the world has gone blind to it. Now, as an engineer, I want to suggest that one of the elements that really resonates with me is what works. So I'll say this up front. I'll come back to this theme as well. We're going to talk about a number of tools today to deal with the truth and lies. How can we apply what we've learned? How can we avoid what Hosea says? My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Well, obviously, knowledge is key then. It helps if we know certain things that are true so we can build upon them. One of the things that has always upset me about so-called education, which is really indoctrination and dumbing down, has been for years, is that kids are not taught to think. In fact, they're taught not to think. They're taught to emote. How do you feel about that? What the truth is doesn't matter. Logic doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. It's what you feel about it that counts. We're going to make sure you feel something that's so wrong you can't tell an innie from an outie, or you won't recognize when we're killing you. And that is literally true at this point. So one of the tools that I'll mention, because I have talked about this literally for as long as I've been doing radio, it has a number of names. You'll hear Pareto's rule. I like to call it the 80-20 rule, and it goes something like this. Now, it applies in many areas. Certainly, 80% of the job takes 20% of the time and vice versa. You've heard Pareto's rule applied a number of ways. But when it comes to truth, the 80-20 rule says, hey, if you mix 80% truth with 20% lie, people will swallow it every time. Sometimes, once you get good at it, at least briefly, you can even swap that ratio around. You can go 80% lie and 20% truth. And today, we see lots of that. Now, up front, here's another place that I want to go. Because remember the line from Mark Twain. I quote this frequently. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. The problem is people who have been dumbed down and cannot associate the truth, cannot reason logically, can't recognize logical fallacies, can't remember or understand when they're being lied to outright, when they're willing to swallow the 80-20 rule, they'll swallow all kinds of bogus statistics. One of the problems we have is a nation now that has gotten to be so proficient at lying, so much 80-20 rule, that you can't trust the numbers anyway. How many people have died from COVID? Answer, well, not nearly as many as died with COVID or died with a positive test, which turned out to be bogus because it produced numbers of false positives, sometimes 90% or more. The numbers are bogus. How about the inflation rate? Anybody believe it's only 3%, 6%, 10%? Easily. Average, energy, food, much, much higher than that. Two or three times more. Same thing goes for joblessness data. You name it, if it's a government statistic, it's probably, at best, 80-20 rule, but at worst, bald-faced lie. Again, I'll say this. One of the things about engineering that I think has helped shape my thinking, and certainly when it comes to truth, folks, it's real handy to remember. Engineering is about what works. All right, if I tried to, when I was working and getting paid as an engineer, if I built a circuit and the circuit didn't work, something's wrong. And I was paid to figure out what's wrong and fix it so that it did work. Well, you have to know a little bit about engineering, about Kirchhoff's current and voltage laws, about how to analyze what's going on in there. And the facts that you understand will help you produce something that works. And then it turns out there's even more to it as you get to be a better and better engineer. Can I build it better, cheaper, faster? Can I make it work more efficiently, less power, more inexpensively? You name it, all kinds of things, but still, it all boils down to what works, and there are tools that we learn to use in order to do a better job at that. Now, I want to point out one other thing, I guess, by way of explanation here. There are a number of things that don't work, and we see that. And unfortunately, dumb unto death or stupid unto death applies in this area as well. I'll throw this example out up front, and Let it sit there and stink for a second. There are, and I'm sure you've known them, I've known many, many over the years, gun control feminist women. They generally get TV shows and say idiotic things on them. I said it this last week. They're stupid, damn stupid, and whoopee. And this is a woman who literally played an alien on Star Trek, and she thinks that an AR-15 will vaporize somebody, turn them to dust. She said this on national TV. Well, whoopee, we don't have phasers, and an AR-15 is not a phaser. So most of the time, what we see with so many of these leftists that emote and use emotions to claim, oh, if you don't want to do what we want you to do, you're killing kids. Well, you know what? They love killing kids. Just ask them how they feel about abortion. The more we kill, the better. How about if we kill them once they're out of school? Yeah, that's fine. How about if we poison poke them? That's fine. The only thing you're not allowed to do is use statistics, knowledge, history, facts, to argue against what they want to do to people, which is disarm them so that they can kill even more. Let's be honest. Now, the trouble is most of the dumbed-down feminist types aren't smart enough to see that. They can't connect the dots. And most of the time, now here's where I'm going to say something politically incorrect, and I'll stand by it. Most of the time, unless these gun control feminist women are terminally stupid, listen carefully, just one rape, or even an attempted rape in some cases, if they're a bit smarter than the average dumbed-down feminist, just one rape will convince them otherwise. They won't believe history, statistics, logic, facts. But being faced with the idea of, you know what, a man really is stronger than me, and he really did rape me. And if I'd had a gun, well, it couldn't have been any worse, right? No amount of statistics, history, or facts will demonstrate to somebody who is dumb unto death exactly what's happened, except maybe death itself or a near-death experience. And then oftentimes they become the staunchest defenders of, well, what? Truth, justice, and the American way. The rights to keep and bear arms. The rights that people fought and died for once they realized they were worth fighting and dying for. And I'll say this, since I've already gone politically incorrect here, once the cannibal rape gangs, and I use that expression carefully, once those cannibal rape gangs that are now being unleashed in and being developed, as a matter of fact, in the big leftist cities, cesspools across the country, once they take over places like New York City, Seattle, Chicago, San Francisco, Philly, and basically every other cesspool city, it'll be too late. And the feminist anti-gun women that realize, uh-oh, I was dumb unto death, are going to find that too late. And the answer of what then proceeds is kind of clear. Now, I want to look at one other thing, the Biden nincompoop
observation. And it goes like this. When it comes to truth and lies and discernment, ask yourself this question. How easy is it to get every single question on, say, a true-false test wrong? Think about it for a second. Here's a little bit of logic. This is going to go over the heads of the leftist feminists, but they're not listening to me anyway. If, in fact, there's a true-false test and you get every single question wrong, true-false, right, 50-50 chance of getting them right, you have to know the right answers so that you can give every single question the wrong answer. Now, there's a motivation there that I won't address. It's something other than intelligence, but maybe it's just a desire to fail. Well, that, I guess, explains the Biden kapoop, because it's tough to get everything wrong. But if you look at the regime that took over in Washington and has literally destroyed America economically, physically, they've destroyed the supply chain. They've opened the border to southern invasion. They're working hard to foment World War III. They have destroyed the economy. They have mandated the poison poke. Every single question, literally, everything that they have done is not only wrong, but incredibly, destructively, massively wrong. So where I'm going with all of this is a couple of things. We're gonna talk about some practical specifics in a minute, but I want to begin this part of a little bit of a tool or an analysis with the 80-20 rule. Now, I've said that if you mix 80% truth with 20% lies, a lot of people have trouble understanding, discerning what is the lie part, and they'll swallow it. But sometimes, given what we know today, it really is easy. Look at the Biden Fuhrer. You know that if their lips are moving, they lie. And it's an old joke, but it's truer and truer. So let's take a couple of easy examples and see if we can't come to a quick understanding of the truth and some discernment. How about a mandate? If Big Brother says you must do something, whether it's wear a mask or take the poison poke, guess what, folks? Don't. Don't fall for it. You know now, if you understand exactly what the goal is here, it's not that they're stupid. No, they're evil. They get every question wrong on purpose. Why? Let's be clear. They want people dead. They want as many Americans dead as possible. If they mask them, they silence them, they muzzle them, and they destroy the ability of their brain to process oxygen, put more CO2 in their bloodstream, destroy their immune systems. The poison poke does that too. Ultimately, they can kill more people. And furthermore, they can easily tell who's dumb enough to fall for the lie. Anybody wearing a mask and a car is an idiot. All right, how about another one? The gun-free killing zones. I've talked about this one. If you understand a really simple, obvious fact, and the reasons are clear as well, if you have discernment and aren't blinded by, stupidity run amok, every single mass shooting, or at least demonstrably, about 98% of them, the massive, massive, overwhelming majority are in gun-free killing zones. So what is the one thing you know you're not going to hear from the so-called left or the so-called right? The Republicans that are in favor of the Second Amendment, you're not going to hear, you know what? We've been going the wrong way on gun control for decade after decade after decade. What do we got? More dead kids, more dumbed down people, more people who can't tell which end of the gun the bullet comes out of unless they watch Star Trek and think it's going to vaporize you. There's a simple answer. When you're going the wrong way, and the Bible makes this clear, they call it teshuva, mistranslated into English as repent. I don't have a problem with that word, but it's really simpler to say when you're going the wrong way, turn around. That's literally what the Hebrew word teshuva means, turn around. And when you're going the wrong way on gun control and you do more of the same stupid thing, that's insane. It's the definition, as Einstein said, of doing something stupid over and over again. It's what insanity amounts to. You turn around. That's the right answer. We get more gun control, more dead kids. How about if we say, let's start repealing stupid and, matter of fact, unconstitutional laws that have done nothing except make Americans stupider and deader. Oh, yeah, they're going to squeal like stuck pigs. But, hey, you know what? They tell me that a rape victim squeals a lot, too, before they realize just how stupid unto death they have been. So turn around. Imagine this, more freedom, more self-defense, more truth, because the fact is, gun control is for slaves, oh, and wannabe slaves. All right, I've mentioned a number of things. Economics is easy, dishonest weights and measures, Scripture tells us that. We haven't had those for the better part of 100 years, certainly for 50 years now, coming up on August of 1971, when Tricky Dick did away with the last vestiges of honest weights and measures. What does that mean? Well, there is no free market. There has not been a free market in the United States, indeed in the world, because of fake money, for decades. You cannot have a free market when people are paying for things with a lie. Let's mention one more while we're on the subject. Have you noticed that just about everything that the left tells you when it comes to sex is a perversion, a twisting, a distortion, anti-scriptural, it's a lie? Literally everything you hear from the District of Criminals, from Hollywood, having to do in any way with sex is guaranteed pretty much to be a lie. So you see where I'm headed here. It's one thing to talk about the 80-20 rule, but in so many of these areas, if Biden opens his mouth, it's a lie. If you can do the opposite, you should, and it'll take you closer to the truth. Now, the trouble is, when people realize, Americans are waking up to the fact that everything we do is wrong. Well, maybe we need to swing back. We've gone too far. We'll swing back towards the 80-20 rule, at least mix in a little bit of truth. But things have gone so far over the cliff now, folks, I think if they even tried to do that, Americans would say, well, wait a minute. How are you doing that? Look at Fauci. He lied for over a year about gain of function. Turns out, yeah, we were developing a bioweapon. Ha ha. And a lot of folks still believe him because he hasn't backtracked and said, at least not except on the mask issue, that I lied, I produced a bioweapon, I killed millions of people, and I'm happy about it. Not yet, anyway. So I'm going to suggest, as we talk about things for the rest of the show here, that America, and indeed the propaganda machine, the William Casey propaganda element, everything is a lie, they have gone too far. They've simply gone so far beyond the 80-20 rule that it's a fatal mistake. Because, listen carefully, here's one of those tools. If we begin to apply some knowledge, understanding of the facts, for example, the way the real world works, as an engineer, I know about laws having to do with voltage and current and physics and aerodynamics and a whole bunch of things. All of those things work. We can build tools. We can build equipment. We can build circuits. We can build airplanes and jet fighters because we understand how the world works. Well, if you tried to build a jet fighter the way they tried to build a school in a gun-free killing zone, nobody would ever want to fly anything. Think about it. Okay, so let's go to a bit of a logic test on this 80-20 rule concept. You may have heard this. It's an ancient experiment, thought experiment, and it goes like this. You may have heard it called the two-door, the lady or the tiger test. And it goes something like this again. There are two doors, and you are supposed to pick one of them because maybe you've been held captive by this this nasty bunch of people, like, say, the Biden regime. And behind one door is a lady. If you pick that door, you win and you live. If you pick the other door, the tiger, well, guess what happens? And you're also told, hey, here is your only chance to escape certain death, or 50-50 death anyway. You have two tribal leaders standing before you. And here is, we got to understand, this is the truth. There are two tribal leaders. One of them, imagine this, one of these tribal leaders always, 100% of the time guaranteed, always speaks the truth. The other one always, 100% of the time, lies. Now, that's the fatal flaw, right? Even the Biden Fuhrer, he's stupid enough, occasionally he manages not to lie. Usually when he says, my pants are pooped or something like that. But in this case, we're going to assume here's a tribal leader who always 100% of the time lies. So the test, the logical test, is the following. You have one question. What do you ask? What do you ask for your one question that will guarantee either life or death? Now, ask yourself this. Here's the way the logic works. If I ask the fellow who always speaks the truth which door, he'll tell me the truth. And I would go for that door. But wait, I don't know which one is the liar and which one is the truth teller. That's part of the experiment here. So suppose I ask the liar. Well, he's going to tell me the wrong thing. So if I ask him which door leads to life or which door has a tiger or anything like that, I'm going to get the wrong answer. Ah, wait a second. Now, this kind of gives us a clue. I'm going to suggest here's the answer because we've got a lot to cover today. The way this logical experiment works out is you ask one of the fellows. Turns out it doesn't matter which one. You ask him the following question. Hey, if I ask that other guy, the other tribal leader, your compadre there, your opposite, if I asked him which door has the tiger, or whichever door, which one has the lady, what would he tell me? Isn't that brilliant? Think about it. If the truth teller is the one that you ask the question, he knows the other guy's a liar, and the other guy is going to lie. So he's going to tell you the truth, and it's going to be the wrong answer. On the other hand, if you guess that maybe I should ask the question, and you don't know, of the guy who's always a liar, He's going to think about it a little bit longer. That's always kind of funny. And then he's going to give the same answer because he is going to lie. He knows the guy that's going to tell you the truth is going to tell you the truth, so he's going to invert that and lie. So the simple question, what do you ask? Okay, I ask either one of them. If I ask that other fellow which door I should pick, what would he say? And then you do exactly the opposite. You go to the other door. Regardless of which guy it was, you live. Now, think about that in the context of what we've been talking about today. When it comes to the Biden-Fuhrer, basically, just do the opposite. When it comes to most things that Big Brother tells you, since you understand they want you dead, just do the opposite. Now, understand one other thing. This is why I suggest the 80-20 rule is they've gone too far here. Once these aren't stupid people. They know that once you quit believing the lie, they're going to have to start occasionally not telling you a lie because you'll simply do the opposite. They got to occasionally feed you a bit of truth. Maybe they'll swing back towards 80% lie and 20% truth as opposed to 100%. But there's more to this here than simply doing the opposite. And again, if we start there and ask the question, what does all this tell us about the lies and the truth and where we are today and so forth? We have swung, I will suggest, way beyond the 80% truth, 20% lie part. If you realize that somewhere in the middle, 50-50 lie and 50-50 truth, flip a coin, that's what you get from Big Brother. You see where I'm headed with this? One of the questions that I'm asking and trying to answer today is, what happens in a society where there simply is no truth, where everything is a lie? Answer. If it's always 100% a lie, you can do the opposite, and then you know how to walk. But once they figure out that they've gone too far and that they dearly do want people dead, now you have to see and expect that they'll swing back towards 50-50, where you simply hear the answer from Big Brother or the statistical crew or the liars or those who want you dead, and you realize, I don't have a clue what they're telling me, because the odds are it's at least partly a lie. It's guaranteed not to be the truth, and I can't draw any useful information from it at all. In other words, that's the key. This is called information theory, by the way. When it's a 50-50 shot, you're better off just flipping a coin, as opposed to asking Big Brother, because ultimately you got about an even odds on either score. So if Big Brother's, you know, back in the day when people thought they were always telling the truth, you could listen. And now that you know that they're always lying, you can still listen, but they're not going to stay on that course. So what I want to do here, and we'll pick this up during the next segment of the show, is talk about a couple of specifics and some really easy things that we're seeing in the news that will give us a clue of where we are and what's coming. I've got time just barely to do these two quick stories before the bottom of the hour break. One of them so obvious it won't take but a second or two. People under age 40, said a headline from the Daily Mail earlier this week, they're being urged to have their hearts checked because there's something booga, booga, booga called sudden adult death syndrome, SADS. It's fatal for all kinds of people, regardless of whether they're healthy, have had a good lifestyle. You know what? Here's the part they're not going to say. Sometimes the lie is revealed by what they don't say. Not a word, not a single hint in here about, yeah, the obvious, the vaccine. Doctors are confused. They're shocked. They don't have a clue. So they have this new umbrella term, SADS, to describe the unexpected deaths in young people. It's only unexpected if you fail to realize they take the poison poke and the number of deaths go dramatically up. What's the explanation behind the big lie here? They don't want to tell people the truth. That part we know. They don't want to admit, hey, we know there's going to be a whole lot more dead people, young people especially, because we're killing them. We have to have an umbrella term to try to keep lying to you, even once you figure it out that we've gone beyond 80% lies. The term SAD says the story is used when a postmortem cannot find an obvious cause of death. And guess what? The other thing they quit doing a long time ago was doing postmortems, having autopsies, because, you know, these nasty blood clots and other things show up, and oops, they're clearly correlated. That doesn't prove causation, but we're not going to give you enough information to let you know either way that it has something to do with the poison poke. So here's another place where it's vital to look at the truth and in the process understand the facts so that we can discern the lie. We'll pick it up right there when we get back. Take a bow for the
It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing.
We are back, folks. This is the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Allen. Today we're talking about truth, or emet is the Hebrew word there, and what happens, and I think we're seeing it, when there is no truth. But more importantly, we have to be able to discern and understand. I've mentioned this before, Matthew 24, the most important, first thing at least, that Yeshua says when he was asked, what are we going to be looking for at the end of the age, is see that you're not deceived. And that's not, as it turns out, an easy task. And what we're talking about today are some tools, some ways we can discern that. I mentioned this when it comes to Big Brother statistics. What is the inflation rate? Well, let's put it this way. One of the things we can kind of discern is they're going to lie about it. All right, that's obvious. Which way do you think they're going to lie about it? Are they going to lie and say there's more inflation than there is? Well, probably not. That doesn't serve their purposes. So arguably, they're going to lie on one side or the other. They're going to say maybe there's 3% inflation when it's closer to 10%. But one thing we now know, because we can discern, it's not a perfect lie. They don't lie 100% of the time. And in this case, because there's numbers involved, you can't tell what the opposite is. But we can guess that if they say it's 3%, one thing we know for sure, it's a lot more than that. How much more? Well, now we have other facts, other understanding, other logic and knowledge and feedback that we can use to kind of discern. Remember, one of the keys to engineering is what works. And if we begin to understand what the real inflation rate is, that'll help us make other decisions. That's just one example. As we went to break, I was talking about some of the obvious things that we can look at and discern. For example, sudden adult death syndrome. This was a Daily Mail piece. Lots of people are dying. Young people, especially healthy people, they're just keeling over dead. They don't say a word in here. And right there is how we discern that we're being lied to. The word vaccines does not even show up. Scientists are baffled. No, they're not. They're stupid or they're lying. So we look at the truth, we understand the facts, and we discern the lie. And on that score, here's another story from a lots more reliable source. This is Children's Health Defense, which is RFK Jr.'s organization. The Burning Platform and others have picked this one up. There is a study that's come out, and it basically suggests a link between a fatal, incurable prion disease called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD. I've talked about this for years, but it turns out there's a new variant. Oh, guess what? Seems to appear among vaccinated folks, and it's deadly, and it's a lot faster, too. Imagine that. In other words, once in a while we can see things, and we can verify them and understand what they're telling us. And even if, for example, the numbers in this are wrong, or even if the researchers don't have all the data, what we can recognize is, well, one thing I know for sure, don't take the poison poke. That seems kind of straightforward, doesn't it? Because they want you dead, it's helpful to know, oh yeah, they probably are going to lie about that, especially if they mandate it. If they mandate it, you know you don't want to do it. From there, I want to go to another area, and I've already kind of touched on this, the inflation rate and what it really is and how they're lying about that. I'm working up to a story that I think was kind of fascinating from Eric Peters at epautos.com about houses that are selling. And it turns out there's some strange kind of chin-itching, rubbing things going on here. But let's talk about inflation first to set this one up, and I think it'll make more sense. This piece comes from Michael Robison via the Gateway Pundit. The Biden-Fuhrer's so-called economy, well, at least those who are pulling his puppet strings, out of control, crushing the middle class. Well, this is part of the desire, destroy the middle class. Middle class was what made America what it is. And, of course, to destroy America, you start by destroying the economy, and in the process, you destroy the American middle class. Inflation continues, record-setting rates of increase. Even the regime is admitting that because they can't hide that. It's obvious. Rent costs are crushing Americans. And the Biden-Fuhrer tells you, oh, see, we have raised the minimum wage, which turns out to be economic stupidity. And this set of facts helps us to understand why. The $15 minimum wage now falls far short, and it's far shorter than it was given the inflation that's out of control. Can you see the pattern here? Of a living wage. Since the regime took over, the wages in America have risen, the cost of living has risen far faster, and as a result, here's one of the facts in this one. For those who work 45 hours a week, earning $15 an hour, after taxes and insurance, the average monthly take-home pay is about $1,890 per month. And that is not enough for most working Americans to keep a home, buy gas, buy food, and create savings in most of the country. Even with two income earning adults, the average monthly bring home is less than $4,000. Bottom line, that no longer allows Americans to even remotely have a simple life. They're being squeezed, they're being destroyed. Cost of rent in the United States, according to the WAPO, for crying out loud, and other sources, is up, depending on which sources and where and so forth, at least 30%, maybe 60% since the beginning of this year. Folks, that is, by any measure, that's hyperinflation. You can go and look at the details, and I'll skip over some of this. Obviously, the cost of energy, gasoline, electricity, gone through the roof. They are up 19 to 40% over the last year. Food costs are up almost 40% nationwide in 1 year. And guess what? I've been saying this for months now. They're going to go up a whole lot more. And not only that, credit card debt is soaring as Americans realize they can't make ends meet. They're falling. In the case of the average single $15 an hour minimum wage earner, they have a deficit on average of about $771 per month, just shy of a $10,000 per year, digging themselves into a hole. For two earners, especially if they have children, cost of groceries, incidentals, and more, well, yeah. The desire here is not just to kill you with the poison poke, but to destroy everything you've worked for and take it all away. Says this author, America is clearly heading for a financial crisis like it's never seen before. Well, we know their lips are moving. They're lying. Yes, they're not going to admit that either. Where do we go next? Here is the story that I think will help kind of put some things together. Maybe a thought experiment is in line, and it'll help us to kind of see where we need to go. That's always the goal, right? Come out of her, my people. But in particular, as we come out of her, what do we need to do? Well, sometimes if you don't know which direction to go and you don't have a truth teller and a liar that you can ask a trick question to and get the right answer, you better use some discernment, some knowledge, some facts, some understanding. And then we can walk the correct path. Now, ultimately, I'll suggest, yep, we know that Scripture is truth, and that's going to help us even more. But there are a whole lot of people that aren't there yet, and we're going to have to deal with them along the way, too. So here we go. This piece is called Empty Houses from Eric Peters. And he says, before, prior to the pandemic, when a house sold, here was what happened. Imagine this. People usually bought it and occupied it. It was occupied by mostly the people who bought it. Now, he says, when houses sell, it's surprising how often they remain empty, sometimes for years, which makes one wonder just who it was that bought them and especially why. He goes through some evidence from his rural Southwest Virginia location. You can probably think about things you've seen. I've heard this story in a number of cases. There's anecdotal evidence, but at least if it's people you know or areas you're familiar with, well, that's probably a lot more reliable than government lies or statistics, right? Anyway, this is happening all over the country. He talks about two houses that were sold. They were put on the market. Immediately they sold, within 24 hours of being listed, at wildly inflated prices, especially for this area. That's happening all over the place, and maybe it's a result of several things. A dearth of new construction caused by the uncontrolled demolition of supply chains, right? You start a house, before you're finished, cement is up 40%, lumber is up 40%, maybe things go through the roof, maybe you can't get windows, you can't get parts, you can't find labor. Oh, it's a gamble. So, yeah, there are less houses being built. There's also the affluent idea. People that are rich or living in an affluent area, they sell those homes, places like D.C. or California, get the heck out of Dodge, and they use the wildly inflated prices to get out of Dodge and then buy something cheaper somewhere a lot safer before the next round of lockdowns or cannibal rape gangs or whatever it might be. Especially if it's a more rural area. Now, the Biden-Fuhrer's uncontrolled demolition of the economy also triggered a rise in interest rates, which have popped the bubbly real estate market. But still,
This is why Peter's is going through this. Think about it, folks. This is a look at the various possibilities. What are the explanations, right? It's not just true or false, in which case I know you got a 50-50 chance. No, there's a number of options. How do we discern? What's going on with houses that's been selling but no one's living in? Peter's asked the question this way. Wouldn't you think it's strange if there was a car dealership, the lots were full up with cars that they said were sold? What's going on? Well, maybe people are just buying those houses as a fallback, a bug-out location, somewhere to go to, maybe a nice area to get away from it all or to get away from the cannibal rape gangs. But it's unlikely that that's the real big answer because most people can't afford to do that. What else? Well, in the 20 years I've lived on this road, he said, when a home sold, the new people are living in it within a month or so. No one's even visiting these homes, though. And that ought to raise some eyebrows. I work from home, he says, and I see it. You can bet that something is different here. This suggests the homes may have been bought as investments. Probably not by private parties, because most people can't afford that either, any more than they can afford to buy a whole bunch of homes to bug out. And there just aren't enough Hollywood types to buy up all of the country. Maybe... Notice they're not even renting these to somebody. Who can afford to leave a now average maybe couple $250,000, $300,000 plus house sitting unoccupied for years? Well, I know. Pick me. How about a major investment group like Vanguard or BlackRock that have not only, as he puts it, a very thick wallet, but they are right there at the money printing spigot. They can rewild the country and buy like there's no tomorrow because as far as they're concerned, they don't have to pay for it, right? They got trillions, literally trillions with a T, under management. So apparently, he says, BlackRock has been investing in private homes, buying even whole neighborhoods, and they have the financial wherewithal to do so. But why? Why would you do that? Sounds stupid. Let that investment sit for years without even generating a return. A house just sitting there and not appreciating is costing somebody. Capital is tied up. Property taxes. Well, they pay them. Oh, and maybe this is part of the equation here. Even a big corporation, unless the power has been turned off, essentially has utility bills to be paid, maintenance that has to happen, or the house becomes a liability. So, here's one explanation. Maybe BlackRock or Vanguard or whoever's doing this, they're so smart, so connected, they knew the real estate bubble was going to continue inflating forever. Then they would resell and make a killing at wildly inflated prices. All right, honestly, I'm not buying that one for reasons that how stupid do we think these people are? The bubble will pop. Okay, how about option B? Or maybe their strategy is, and that's I think this gets closer, to inflate the value of all the nearby real estate. Now, why would they do this? Go in and buy whole neighborhoods, inflate the value of all the real estate, and essentially do what would have been called neighborhood busting. Drive people out of the other houses for whatever reason. Maybe they want to kill people. Maybe they want to own everything so that when you are a serf on the land, you have no choice but to go to them. They drive up the property taxes and people can't pay it. They are forced to move. Isn't that satanically evil? Clever, but evil. And the only way you can do it, of course, is if you can print money to forever. So this has kind of the ring of truth to it. And it forces, says Eric Peters, remaining owners to vacate their houses. Now, I mention this because I do think that is at least in part what's going on here. And if you have moved out to a bug-out location, you live off-grid, be aware that there are going to be attacks. One of them is going to be on water. A number of things like that. On all of the places that people who know what's going on try to escape. Because the goal, remember, is clear. They want you dead. They want you destroyed. They want to destroy the middle class. They want to close off all the avenues of escape. What kinds of things will they be attempting? Now, imagine if you have unlimited resources. You can print money without concern. And your goal is to destroy. What was it? Yeah, they come but to kill and destroy. Then some of this starts to make sense. Eric Peters calls it another effort at enserfment. Now, I'm going to mention one other possibility here, because if you also know, for example, what the Daily Mail doesn't know, that all these young people are dying because they were stupid enough, they were duped into taking the poison poke. Old people are dying, middle-aged people, kids are dying, everybody that's taking the poison poke, some of them are dying right away, some will linger for a year or two, many are dead men walking, some actually got the placebo, they won't die at all unless they stick around too closely to people that are expelling spike proteins and end up hurting them and killing them. But if you understand, right, that there's going to be a huge die-off, think about this. You understand there's going to be a huge die-off and a whole glut of homes on the market. Doesn't it make sense to start buying them up front? And then when people start dying off and, you know, ma and pa die and there's the kids are dead because they took the poison poke, now the house ends up on the market and drives the price down. Well, hey, now you can buy it because you've got unlimited money for more pennies on the dollar. And now you begin literally to snap up whatever's left. Now, at this point, I'll mention quickly, as some of you know, I'm a pilot. I'd love to have another airplane. And I keep thinking, you know, now knowing what I know, there are going to be lots of pilots with nice airplanes who are going to, whether I like it or not, they're going to die. And there are going to be less pilots flying because a lot of them were forced to take the poison poke. There are probably going to be some nice inexpensive airplanes on the market, too. Will you be able to afford gas? Not if Big Brother has his way. Are they BlackRock and Vanguard probably going to buy them up too just to make sure nobody gets them? Yeah, you can kind of see where this is headed. So all of this is by way of a thought experiment. Oh, yeah, and there's another element too, as Peters points out. How about you buy these houses and then give them to the kind of people that most folks don't want to live near? Subsidized Section 8 occupants, or how about the raft of illegal aliens that are coming in? Oh, yeah, not only give them a free bus ticket, give them a free house in some place you want to destroy. This is all about leftists destroying everything and everyone that they can. And at the same time, making it clear that, oh yeah, if you thought you lived in a safe area, well, we're going to destroy it so that it's no longer safe. You see where I'm headed? I've got one more quick comment here. I'll just read the headline from a piece by James Bovard. Will punch drunk Biden take America down with him? And he says, Biden perennially tells audiences, for example, that banning assault weapons is okay because the Second Amendment doesn't matter. Oh, well, no, actually, Americans couldn't always buy cannons. Turns out that was a lie. And as he notes, even the WAPO has derided it as a lie. And here's the line I think is kind of funny in this one. Democrats in 2020 knew the guy was senile. And they were desperate to destroy Donald Trump and the country. And if you think about it, folks, this is kind of a brilliant, although satanic plan. Their verdict, Biden is a pathological liar, but he's our pathological liar. Not only that, he's senile, he's a traitor, he's guilty of bribery and all kinds of surly stuff. If you can put somebody like that in office, what can't you get away with? Maybe there's an element of that, too. There was a jolting video, he notes, of Biden attempting to shake hands with invisible people on stage. That woke a lot of people up, not awakened, but woke them up. And now the new line is to believe that Biden is impaired requires a belief in a massive conspiracy by thousands of people. No, it doesn't. All it does, all it's required is to believe that the same kind of people who have been lying through their damnable teeth for so long are going to continue to lie, especially about things like they want you dead. So the more we understand, in other words, the more we're able to discern truth from lies. And that leads me to where I want to wrap up with today, because I said, you know, ultimately, one of the source of truth is Scripture itself. And with that in mind, I'm going to go through a couple of things briefly. I've mentioned this quote from the Mashiach, the Messiah, before. In John 8, he says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And he goes on then to talk about truth and says, "Hey, you guys, I tell you the truth, but you don't believe me. And if I tell you the truth, why don't you believe me?" He said, "Then I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes unto the Father but by me. The Spirit of truth, which the world won't receive because it sees him not, doesn't know him, but you know him because he dwells in you, it shall be in you." Then he goes on to talk about the Comforter and the Spirit of truth. And bottom line, sanctify those that we deal with. In other words, set them apart via the truth. Your word is truth. I sanctify myself, he adds, that they might be sanctified through the truth. Okay, so here is a kind of a continuation of this concept of truth. And where I want to go next as we start to wrap things up today are a couple of places in Scripture that give us a clue on this score. For example, if you do a search for truth, you're going to find out that the very first place it's mentioned is in Genesis chapter 24. Now, this is the story of the servant. Of Abraham's servant, he is never named, and I've talked a lot about this. I think it's a wonderful story. So many examples of how this fits into the common law when we had law. But the servant goes and he prays because he has been tasked by Abraham in his name to go out and get a bride for his son Isaac. So he comes up and he prays. Here's how I'm going to know. And he says this, "Blessed be Yahuwah Elohim of my master Abraham."
who has not left destitute my master of his mercy and his truth. That's the word emet. It's the first time it's used in the Bible. I'm in the way, and Yahuwah has now led me to the house of my master's brethren. And there are other references to truth and stories right there in Genesis that point out truth, including Jacob himself, who is identified with emet, or truth. And we see Joseph, his son, who tests his brothers. Have they learned the lesson or not? I'm going to see whether there's any truth in you. He has the story. Now, I want to mention one other thing I think is kind of fascinating. I'm not always big on numbers or understanding, but sometimes you see something in the letters of a Hebrew word that almost leap off the page at you. The word emet is one of those. It begins with an aleph, and it ends with a tav. Okay, we know that the pointer to the direct object is aleph tav. I am the beginning and the end, the aleph and the tav. That's in Revelation. The aleph and the tav were there in the beginning. He is, in fact, the pointer to the direct object of so much, so all that makes sense. But how do we get from et, or aleph tav, to emet? Real simple. You put a mem in the middle. So if you think about what it's showing us here, truth, you have an aleph and the tav, the beginning and the end, and in the middle, the mem is has kind of a number of associations with various Hebrew words. The mem itself, mayim, water. Water is often associated with something that's turbulent. How do you connect something turbulent from the beginning to the end? Ah, there you go, truth. Doesn't that kind of make sense? Again, I'm talking about things at work, and I want to end with just one more quick understanding here. Now, I've mentioned John chapter 8. I'm going to suggest that the bottom line with the things Yeshua is saying in John chapter 8 is, hey, why don't you all get it? There are some other references. I will encourage you to look at Romans chapter 1. He too talks about truth, and the wrath of Elohim is revealed against all ungodliness and untorilessness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, change the truth of Elohim into a lie, worship the creator, the creature more than the creator. And more about truth in there. But this, I think, is really kind of fascinating. This is how we'll end today. It's the story that shows up in Zechariah chapter 8. And it says, thus says Yahuwah, I'll return to Zion, dwell in the midst of them. And at this point, now this is in the future, mind you, Jerusalem shall be called the city of truth, the mountain of Yahuwah, Zevuot, the holy mountain. And he goes on to talk about elements of this truth, and how the remnant that's there, I'm not going to treat them as I did in the former days. So, this is what kind of leaped off the page at me. For thus says Yahuwah Zevuot, just as I determined to punish you when your fathers provoked me to wrath, says Yahuwah Zevuot, and I wouldn't relent, so again in these days, the days that we hope to be able to walk into, to stand fast, to be overcomers and reach, well, I'm determined to do good to Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. Do not fear. Here are the things you need to do. Think about this in the context of where we are. We need to discern and be able to understand truth. And then he says this, speak each man the truth to his neighbor. Give judgment in your gates for truth, justice, and peace. Let none of you think evil in your heart against your neighbor. Do not love a false oath. Wow, that pretty well describes America 2022, doesn't it? For all of these things, they're things that I hate, says Yahuwah. So think about that, folks. There is more in here. I would encourage people to go out and read this. Do a search on truth in Scripture and see how much of what's in here ought to really ring true, especially today. But understand that when there is no truth, the one thing we know about that society is it's dead. We need to come out. We need to seek truth and to begin to share it with our neighbors. Help when we can, but walk in it ourselves especially. So with that, I will say, hey, thanks for being with us. Understand where we are and how important, how vital it is that we know what the truth is and that we walk it out. And again, I mentioned some tools today. I'll say this again. When I was a young engineer, I learned that one of the things that was really helpful to know whether or not what we have learned, the knowledge that we've put to task, is on track or not, is what works. Engineering is about what works. And you know what? What works when it comes to pick, choose, understand, walk in obedience to Him, what works is His truth. The more we recognize about the world, about what is truth and what is lies, the more we'll see. And this is one of the things I learned decades ago, and it was a hard lesson, but I'm thankful. His truth will save lives. Yeshua, literally, his truth, salvation, is the salvation of Yah, the truth, the life. All of these things are inextricably intertwined, and it is truth that will, in fact, set us free. We can come out of the lies and seek the truth, and we will find it. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.